Welcome back to the Lake of Rage podcast. I am not your host, Mellow underscore Magikarp. I am Grant Matthew, also known as Boo underscore CK. And today, I have two very special guests to help me close out season one of the Lake of Rage podcast. The first you might know as the host of the Lake of Rage podcast, Kevin Clemente, Mellow underscore Magikarp. Mellow, how are you?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Book?
I'm all right. And the other you might know from his recent run in the Players' Cup 3. He also backed that up with a win last night in the Glimwood Challenge, his second in the tournament series. He is a widely recognized player in the community and the top streamer, in my opinion, Azul Garcia Griego. How are you, Azul?
I'm doing pretty good today. Pretty good.
Bro, good. Why did he get that massive intro? And then he just say, and the guy who normally posts does the podcast.
Oh, and this is his channel. Yes. Also, by the way. So if you're new to the channel, we're going to start things off real quick with a quick speed dating. 20 questions to see. I know Mello's very much anticipating this as he wants to set the record. So I think, Azul, if you could just deafen yourself for a quick minute. I've got the timer set.
Oh, wait, like you don't want me to be able to hear him either?
We get the same questions. Yeah, because
you'll know.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay, he's deafened.
Bro, now I'm stressed.
This is I set this up. You should be able to do well. Okay.
Is it all math questions?
There is a math question.
Oh God. Let me open my calculator.
Yeah, let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready.
Okay. TV or movies?
TV.
Last TV show you watched?
Great British Bake Off.
Burgers or glizzies?
Burgers.
Ketchup, mustard, or relish?
Mustard.
Corn or flour tortillas?
Flour.
Beans or rice?
Beans.
Super salad?
Salad.
Favorite salad dressing?
Blue cheese.
Breakfast or brunch?
Brunch.
Disney, Cartoon Network, or Nickelodeon?
Nickelodeon.
Favorite generation of Pokemon?
Gen 5.
Favorite Pokemon?
Gyarados.
Favorite deck of all time?
Zoroark and Expanded.
Fourth Pokecom or first Great Ball?
Fourth Pokecom.
Control, Mill, or Stall?
Control.
Pedro or Tord?
Pedro.
6 times 9?
6 times 9 is 54.
And that's time.
Okay.
Wow. And you got it right.
Bro, that's easy. You just do the finger trick.
You know how many that is? 17, Mel.
Yo, let's go.
17.
Your boy out here. Good. What's the record? I don't think that's the record.
I think that tied Eevee, maybe.
No, it wasn't. It was like Ozzy, I think.
Or Ozzy or Eevee. Yeah, somebody. I think 17 was the number.
Yo, let's go. All right. I didn't embarrass myself. That's what matters. Yeah.
You could come back. All right. I won't tell you how many you got, but all right, you ready for this, Azul?
So am I trying to pick my answer, or am I trying to guess something?
It'll be this or that, or favorite this, something okay, like okay, that. Okay. Pretty easy. Speed run, ready?
Mm-hmm.
It's 20 questions, 1 minute, ready?
Mm-hmm.
TV or movies?
Movies.
Last movie you watched?
Mortal Kombat.
Burgers or glizzies?
Burgers.
Ketchup, mustard, or relish?
Ketchup.
Corn or flour tortillas?
Flour.
Beans or rice?
Rice.
Super salad?
Salad.
Favorite salad dressing?
Ranch.
Breakfast or brunch?
Brunch.
Disney, Cartoon Network, or Nickelodeon?
Disney.
Favorite generation of Pokemon?
Doesn't matter.
Favorite Pokemon?
Doesn't matter.
Favorite deck of all time?
Doesn't matter.
Fourth Pokecom or first Great Ball?
Fourth Pokecom.
Control, Miller, Stall?
Control.
American Dad or Pram?
AD.
6 times 9?
54?
And that's time. It is 54. If you got that, you might have got to the record setting question.
No, that would be an asterisk next to that. He literally said doesn't matter for half of them.
Well, you've counted pass before.
That is true.
I went back. I checked the VODs.
I have.
But like that's my answer. That's my answer. Is it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. That's better than pass.
Not for those.
No, favorite Pokemon? That's like the most important question.
No.
I mean, y'all have to just say one.
So why AD over Pran? Is it because it's his house?
I don't know. I just thought that'd be a funny switch up. I don't know. That's it. Oh yeah, it is his house too. I guess I'd rather not get kicked out of the house. That's a good one too.
The next question was favorite mod, and for Kevin it'd be other than your wife.
Okay, good. I was gonna say like Betty by far. Like I can't answer something else.
I literally have it in parentheses other than your wife.
Bro, slap in the chat. I don't know if I can say slap.
Sancho all day. Sorry, boo.
That's fine. No, that's fair. And the answer to Pedro Tord was actually Robin. that was the only one I asked a different question for. Was
that like favorite European?
Yeah, I asked him Pedro or Tord, and I asked you American Dad or Pram.
I stand by my answer.
What's next on the agenda here? That was fun. I gotta go look in Evie's corner.
Next up on the agenda is the Players Cup 4 stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, if only we had an expert with the Players Cup here to talk about it.
Hey, I missed qualifying for Players Cup 3, so I'm pretty goated on that.
Yeah, so we just should talk about that in general, right? Like, you didn't qualify, Azul did, but you both did all of your qualifications for PC3 on stream, right?
Yeah. I think I played like 3 off stream. And those were like, I got 2 firsts and a second. I probably should have kept doing that.
Yeah.
I think there definitely is a slight advantage to playing off stream for sure. A little bit more focused, especially with the Players Cup ones, because there's so much downtime in between the rounds. Like you're always talking to chat so much and distracted. And then there's also like, I mean, some people are gonna try and snipe you, right? You're gonna get sniped, and then there's also a lot of people just want to be in your tournament, of course, like with the streamer. So that's like another thing. So the quality of player, I feel like, is usually a little bit higher than just like full RNG random from the pool of PTCGO. So
that'd be interesting. I'd actually be super curious to. I don't want to test it because honestly, I hate the qualification process with a passion. And it's like, well, if I'm gonna stream and I'm gonna play qualifiers, I'm gonna do both at the same time.
Yeah,
but I'd be curious to see if there actually is a difference, because in theory there is, right? Like you're probably like me, you get people after the tournament, they'll show up in your chat and they'll be like GGs. It's like,
yeah,
okay, cool.
Which is like fine, that thing's like, it's like fine for them to like want to play, but that definitely is like, I think it's just like on average the quality of player who watches us as competitive Pokemon players who stream, they're going to be better than the average player who you just hit when you just queue up a random tournament without anyone trying to snipe you, right? But the average player who would like try and get into your lobby, which is also, it's kind of just like, fine, you're streaming, it's whatever, right? If they're not hard sniping, that's the only thing where you're like, I don't want you to have my stream open. But you know, if you try and play in the same tournament as me, that's fine, right? Especially like, I try and hide the deck I pick. It's like a little bit of protection, I guess. Why not? Like, that's something I can do. I'm still live. I don't have a delay, but I can like hide what deck I'm picking before I go into each tournament. But yeah, I bet the average player is just not going to be as good as the average person who's just trying to get into our lobby through the chat.
Is there any advantage to like the time that you stream at or the time that you try and qualify? Like I was watching Pedro this morning and he was hitting, you know, different names, like mostly European names. Like, is there any strategy to that, or is it just do it when you can and high traffic, low traffic?
I mean, I've run into everyone that you can imagine, because like it's late time for Europe for me, but I've run into Nico, I've run into Tord, and then it's, you know, afternoonish, early evening for NA, but I've run into Isaiah Bradner and Isaiah Williams when he was playing, and you know, so I don't know. I just feel like I run into everyone at every time anyway, so I don't think it makes a huge difference, but I know people will disagree with that. Like there's some people, it's like, I play at this time because everyone sucks. It's like, oh, maybe.
Yeah, there might be some sweet spot time out there, but when it is like, when it's like global, you're gonna be those other times. There's probably a sweet spot to avoid Europe slash like an awkward time for America in general. That would probably be it. I don't know what when that would be. Because Latin America is pretty close to American times, right? Pretty close. Yeah. So it'd just be Australia that's really off, but they don't have a ton of players even playing. And like the Australian talent, I feel like is really top heavy. Like their top players are really, really good. But I think there is definitely like a bigger separation there. But they're like,
They don't have enough to fill out their
yeah, they don't have enough to fill out their
like, yeah.
You get 1 point, you're in.
So yeah, there's like a. There's not that many Australian players to even try and avoid anyway. So it'd be like there's probably a perfect time out there, but I have no idea what it is. I don't like playing the first week because I feel like there's a lot more ADP. I don't think that was really true though for Players Cup 3, but 1 and 2, there was a lot of ADP in the first week and a half. But Players Cup 3, I avoided playing for like the first 2 weeks, but I don't think there was actually that much ADP in the first couple weeks.
I feel like there was more Eternatus as the tournament went on. At least that's what I found because I kind of split it all up and. Boy, there was like no Eternatus ever, and then suddenly I'm like, peak. And then you just run into all the Eternatus in the world, which makes sense. It was the BDIF by the end of that format. Like, it was pretty, pretty clearly the top tier deck. But so I assume then ADP was before that, but like you, I didn't use a ton of keys early, so I don't know for sure.
ADP is the safety pick. It, you know, has roughly 50-50 matchups with everybody, right? Yeah. So it's a safe comfort to start your runoff with before you want to, you know, take a risk, build up your points.
I just hate that deck, man. Just playing against it's just like, why am I even bothering? Why don't I just go do literally anything else right now? I don't know. It's it pilots itself. It's not fun. I understand it's powerful, like 100%. I understand there are decisions to be made. Like, a good player playing ADP will do better than a bad player, but it's just like, LIGX'd sick. GG's.
Well, we're seeing that in Pikaram on their last legs here.
What do you mean last legs?
We get a few more months with it before it rotates.
Okay, I was going to say, Peak's still the BDIF.
It's going to be sad to see Peak go, for sure. I don't think anyone's going to wish ADP was coming back. Maybe me, but that's it. Me and Soda.
Recently, the POG format came back into like discussion, and I remember last POG format, you know, they essentially like we're worlds replacement type thing. I was like, I'm gonna play Peak. It's my last chance to play Peak Realm till it's no longer good ever again. Played a heck of a lot of Peak since then.
Yeah,
and then SAC brought it back.
Yeah.
Broken hammers.
We queued up in the team challenge against an ADP that had the Peak Hammers 2 Yelgrunt package. It was literally the same deck. It's like, all right, well, we'll take that. I don't think that's how it works.
I lost to one of those. Am I winning into phase 2 for chill? It was literally just the anti-Orbeetle ADP deck. 4 hammers, 2 Yelgrunts, 4 Marnies. And I was like, what?
You got tweeted out about Orbeetle today, Azul. What do you think about the deck?
Ooh. I mean, it's like
Gamer likes it.
Yeah. I mean, it has its good matchup. It's like, it's obviously not like one of the most powerful decks, but it's like solid. There's a lot of decks that are like really solid in the meta overall. That can kind of just be played if you want to play them. Like, and they're a little bit more obscure, so if you just understand the matchups better than your opponent, I think that's the biggest, they're those kind of decks' biggest advantage. Like, Orbeetle would be one of them. It's like, if you just know all your matchups, you play against someone who just doesn't know what your deck does in the matchup, then that's part of the advantage of playing a deck like that. All those decks are, like, good. Like, the Orbeetle, the Rillaboom decks, or, like, Victory Scorch, very obscure, not very powerful deck. Like, but, like, if you know your matchups, it's, like, not bad.
Yeah, I was going to wonder, what are the picks for? Do you literally just like go to your channel Fireball rankings and be like, whatever's number one is the play? Or do we approach this differently?
For what, for Players Cup?
Yeah, for the qualifiers, not the actual tournament.
Like, what should people play, or what am I going to play?
I guess like if you're a people and you're not Azul GG, you're an average person.
We've seen you pick up any deck and do
you don't count.
I mean, you could basically play anything, to be honest. Like, then the qualifiers, like I'm saying, like, on average, like I said, like, the qualifiers, I think, get harder, like, if you're, like, a streamer, like I said. Like, if you're streaming your qualifiers, the level of, like, it feels like, maybe, and maybe I'm wrong, but, like, there's, like, a even if you just add the aspect of like interacting with chat and streaming while you're playing, that's like enough to make them that much harder, right? So, but if you're just on average, I think you can pretty much play anything, because like I think the average hits you'll hit in the tournaments will just be like, you can pretty much play any like reasonable deck, right? You shouldn't be playing Maractus or something, but you could probably get a dub with Maractus. It wouldn't be that ridiculous. But like, yeah, I think like the average opponents and decks you'll play against, you could probably get away with playing pretty much any reasonable deck, and you'll probably qualify. Like Dustin qualified with Orbeetle, only playing Orbeetle in the last in Players Cup 3. Like, I think knowing the deck and making sure you know the matchups is just the most important part. And then if you know that, you can kind of play whatever you want, I think, for the most part. Like, it's not too much, you don't have to dwell on it too much or anything. Like, Players Cup 2, whoever just played Luke Metal the whole time and got the most points and then couldn't play in the tournament. So, like, I mean, just played Luke Metal the whole time, right? There's Welder decks out there, but just rocking Luke Metal. So, like, pretty much do whatever you want, as long as the deck's reasonable, right?
So I have a follow-up question to that, just because I've heard this rant on your stream. Anyone who's watched your stream, which if they watch me, there's literally no way they haven't found you already. So they might have heard it too, but how do you approach it? How do you actually convince yourself, like, this deck takes an auto loss and that's fine?
I mean, for me, it's like, if I think it's just good enough in the meta overall besides that, then it's just like, then that is just enough. Like there's always like, you can go and like, I've done this before. Like the one that I always use is when I played Glissapod Garb at Madison Regionals, I got second with the quad enhanced hammers. I was like, I want to beat Zork. I body Greninja. So like, there'll be those good players who come through as Greninja. And I tied a Greninja. I should have gone 9-0 that tournament on the Swiss day one, but I tied a Greninja because I played slow. and then I tied Mahone. Maybe I wouldn't have been able to beat Mahone. Me and Mahone tied in the last round as well. So I went like 7-0-2, but I was like, I lose to Gardevoir. But I was like, good players are not going to play Gardevoir. I don't think Gardevoir is very good right now. I could take two losses in day one. So if I hit two Gardevoirs somehow, I'll go 7-2 into day two. I didn't hit a single Gardevoir, so I went 7-0-2 into day two, and no Gardevoirs made day two, because like they shouldn't. And it was a very popular deck. I think it was maybe the most popular deck was Gardevoir, second most popular deck at that tournament. Like, it was a super popular deck, right? But I was like, it's not good. It's going to lose. good players aren't going to play it. And that's something you can factor into more so. In like, it's hard to do in these online tournaments because the meta is definitely doesn't move the way it does in regionals. Mm-hmm. But back in regionals, I would be like, good players are not going to play this deck. If I think I can get to day two, then I don't have to worry about that deck anymore. And that was exactly what happened that tournament. There was like two Gardevoirs in day two, I think. None of them were piloted by players I would consider to be like top players. So I was like, you know, once again, if I take one L to one of the Gardevoirs, I just have to go 4-1, and then I still make top eight, right? So you can go that far and think about it a little bit further, but it's a little bit easier to do in regional level events than online events, because the meta is, it just doesn't move, it doesn't flow the same way it does in like real life regionals. People aren't trying as hard, I think, is the biggest thing. And then definitely like I've said before, and it's not like a bad thing, but the talent pool overall is not as high like on these online events when you compare it. Even if it's the same size as a regional, the talent pool just isn't as high when you compare it to like as 800 person standard regionals in like North America or something. If you compare that to an 800 person online event, it's just not quite there. And that definitely affects what decks will do well and like how the meta can flow and stuff. I don't know. So there's more levels to it in like real life regionals, but in online it's a little bit less easy to predict, I guess. So, like if you're just taking one auto loss to like one of the top five decks, and that's just like fine.
Do you think the way regionals go when we get back to IRL will be different now that we've seen how a meta can shift? Like during the day, you know, people see tournament results and it changes that rapidly versus we were looking on PokéStats to see cup results and things like that, talking to your network of people. Now that we have broader networks and things like that, how do you see the future of that going?
You mean like regional to regional or like Saturday to Sunday? Like cup to cup,
like yeah, regionals and cups, I guess the whole new IRL whenever we get there.
I mean, a week to week for a regional was usually enough time for it to like make the shift, but I just felt like there was like bigger impacts. Like you'd have like a group of top players play a deck that was like a known deck, but they would have a tech for like the biggest deck from last week's regional, and they would just beat that, and then they would still be playing that really good deck. And you just don't see that as much in these online tournaments. Like that's like a big thing, And then that was like a factor where it'd be like, okay, what do we think the best player, like that was something that we'd always talk about, is what do we think the best players are bringing? That's something that like when I was in DDG working with those guys, that's something we focus on a lot, is what are the Europeans bringing? And then eventually, you know, what is Bradner and crew bringing? what do we think they're going to bring? And thankfully, they brought Peak a lot, so that was really easy sometimes. But like, that's way less of a focus on online tournaments. I feel like no one really tries to take that next level because it's just kind of unnecessary. But I feel like in general, with real life tournaments, when they come back, like a week is like more than enough time for our meta to like fully adjust. And then, like, I mean, Saturday to Sunday, I feel like I metagamed like locally pretty hard personally. Like one day, I don't know, so I try and think of a deck. One deck does really well, so a deck counters that deck, so I know that's going to show up tomorrow. So I either play that deck myself and beat the mirror, or I play a deck that beats both those decks. Like the deck that just won yesterday going into Sunday, and the deck that beats that deck, or I play the deck that beats that deck and I tech for the mirror match as well. So I feel like I already did that quite a bit personally, like for like League Cups and League Challenges. And like the meta did shift in, like, there was those shifts, those kind of predictable shifts to like play around as well. So I think that's already like happened. I don't think there's like any more that this online, the way the online has been playing, the online tournaments play out as far as meta shifts go, that'll like really add to IRL tournaments. I think it's just kind of different. And a lot of it is people taking it less seriously, the talent pool overall being lower. So there's less game breaking stuff coming out week to week, or, you know, big event to big event. We see a lot more like repeated stuff, you know, so put a fan of waves and a stealthy hood, but like everyone kind of knew that was happening. And who knows, maybe like the card game's gotten to a point where the meta share or the information share is so high that it's harder to make those big game breaking decks out of nowhere, or big changes to a deck. So we'll have to see how that kind of works when we get back to real life. But I don't expect it to be too much different.
And I guess closed deck lists too will be a big thing.
Bro, I can't wait.
Yeah. You can't hide the spicy techs right now.
I never played a spicy tech in my life, but I'm not that person. I'm just, bro, I took towards school of deck building. 4-4-4-4-4. I'm sure it's good. But just, I don't know, closed deck lists just feel so good sometimes. Like going back, we played a little bit of in person, and it's just like, oh, I have to actually think now, like, does this Urshifu play Mimikyu or not? Ooh, I have to actually, like, I don't know, it feels nice having those actual decisions of like, well, what do I think they're playing? Like, did they tech this, did they not tech this? But that's a different topic. All right,
reminder to chat to submit questions for the end. I haven't seen any physically submitted, but I see people asking questions.
We have 16.
I actually wish that they would do more closed decklist turn. Like, I think all the invitationals should be closed decklist, just to kind of switch it up, because like I think everyone agrees open decklist isn't that much more skillful. It might be, and I don't even know if one is more skillful than the other, it might just be different. I think that might be at least it's fair to say that there's different aspects of skill that get involved when you have open or closed decklist. But I think like the invitationals and stuff, where it's like, we should be able to trust these people not to cheat, and it's such a small tournament that it's easier to keep an eye on, that those should be just closed decklist. So just switch it up. Because like, I played in a closed decklist tournament invitational. I don't know which one it was, but it was just like a nice switch up. It was like, oh, we're doing closed decklist. It was one of the like throwback tournaments. Like, I was playing Buzzrock or something. Oh, no, I was playing Clive's deck, Zygarde.
All of Vision's tournaments have been closed decklist.
Yeah, it was like a nice switch up. Yeah. And it's not like, I don't know personally, like, I haven't really thought about it too much if one is better than the other or more skillful or not. They're definitely different, and they require a different set of skills to apply to the game while you're playing it. But it's just nice to have the switch up for sure. And I understand definitely majority of online tournaments with the big ones, they got to be like closed decklist, right? Or open decklist, my bad. They have to be open decklist because it's so easy to cheat. And people would definitely take advantage of that for sure. I mean, I would hope they wouldn't, but they would. So they would. So it's nice. It would be nice to just have more, like, especially the smaller or invitational tournaments, be closed decklist for sure.
So, like, that's how the Sunday Open started, right?
Oh, because you could change every round too.
List, yeah.
The one I won, I kept changing my tech every round because I couldn't decide if Feeny or Apalm was good. I never used either of them. They were both trash, but so this is kind of going into the next segment, but that kind of made me think, when I was watching you restream the finals, there's only 16 people. Every single game is recorded. Do you think moving forward, the global finals for the Players' Cup could and or should be closed deck list? Or do you like the consistency of keeping it open? Because you shouldn't cheat at that point, right?
Yeah, and if they do, they just get kind of disqualified. Like, it's all recorded, so like they could have, like, I don't know, whoever goes over stuff, just have someone who knows the game go over, have Puka. Be like, yo, Puka, do you want to work some overtime? We got some VODs for you to watch and just confirm that it works with the deck list. And he's like, all right, sure, I got nothing better to do. You know, he's at home drinking tea or whatever, goes over a couple VODs. So I think yes, just because it's nice to have the switch up. So I would just say yes. Like, it would be nice if they did a closed deck list. So I would vote, my vote would be yes, just because I would like more stuff to be closed deck list when it's like that smaller environment, 16 people, invitational, whatever. So yeah, I would like to see that. It would be cool. Whenever it can be done to like minimize the cheating, it should be done, I think. Because the switch up is just really nice.
And if you get caught in an invitational, then take it up with
the You wouldn't even just get like DQ'd from the event. You'd be definitely like, I mean, everyone would know you'd just be like freaking exiled from the community.
Yeah. All right. We ready to move on?
Yeah,
to the...
I was going to say, should that? That feels like a good transition into the actual like interview, I guess. Because, like, I don't know, man. You won the Glimwood Challenge, Azul. I feel like we need to talk about that.
That's his second one. He won two now.
Wait, really?
Yeah, he won the second one.
I'm the Glimwood King, bro.
Yeah.
Yo, do we own the Impy Pimps now?
They're done, bro. They got cute to get that free dub with us with Danny bringing control, but that's it. I'm taking over the Glimwood, bro.
They're ours. Max, we're taking the podcast. We're taking the team. Then we're dismantling the team. We don't really want it.
We'll take it.
Dan wanted to bring a deck to show his skill. all right, Kevin, I'll let you lead off the interview for PC3.
I guess the biggest question I have is kind of like the deck building process. So you've said publicly you worked with Mike Fouché, who also made global finals.
Mm-hmm.
Who approached who? What ideas? Was it just automatically like Rapid Strike Urshifu's broken, let's build it? Or was there some, like, how did that whole discussion go and come about? And
I mean, he asked me if I wanted to work together, and I was like, sure, why not? Because I didn't really have anyone else who was like, I mean, I didn't know really anyone else who was in the finals. So I was like, yeah, sure, why not? I didn't have any plans to like reach out to anyone else either. So I was like, sure. We didn't like ever test. We just talked ideas and then shared our results, but all my results are just me streaming, so like anything I picked up from that, and then, you know, talked about text and what was good. Like, we were both like initially like I think we were both like trying out Rapid Strike because it was like the new cool deck to try out, so of course we were trying it out, and then we both like were on Luke Metal for a bit. Like, I think we both mentioned Luke Metal to each other, and we're like, it seems really good, but then, you know, Phoebe Eternatus happened, and we're like, okay, if Welder decks are a thing and Phoebe Eternatus is a thing, there's no reason to bring Luke Metal. We also don't think anyone will bring Luke Metal. There's no reason for anyone to play Luke Metal. It doesn't make any sense. So we immediately like check that off our list of being like, we're not going to play it. No one will play it. We came to the same conclusion for Decidueye, Welder decks plus Eternatus Phoebe can beat it. And at that point, I was like, kind of like, Eternatus might just be the best deck in the format. I think it is still really, really good. Besides the Rapid Strike matchup, like, it's insanely good. Like, when you body peak, you're favored against ADP, you can beat LMZ. Like, what beats you? You beat the Mewtwo decks. Like, it's only Rapid Strike. Like, you can lose to a lot of those decks and any of those decks, but it's really only Rapid Strike that's like hard keeps it in check. Because it is so popular right now. And I guess random stuff like Decidueye, but...
That's not a deck.
Yeah. it's a deck when it wins, otherwise it's not a deck. Exactly. It's like when it wins, oh, Decidueye, oh no! And when it does back-to-back, then people tech for it. But if they don't win, if you don't win back-to-back, if Decidueye does not win back-to-back, then no one cares about it, so... Has to win back-to-back tournaments. But yeah, then we just, like, we were tossing around ideas. It came around to the point where he was like, his fallback was Pikarama, obviously, and I was like, my fallback's Tempozard. And the more I thought about it, I was like, I might just play Tempozard. And then we were like, the Australians are probably bringing Pikarom. So we kind of put the Australians on Pikarom. The Pikarom players are just stubborn and don't put it down. So that's like the new stubborn deck. It's like the Pikarom players, they just won't put Pikarom down.
You can just mention my name if you want. It's fine.
You, Justin Bukhari, Isaiah Bradner. Or was it Bradner one? Or not Isaiah. You, Justin Bukhari, the Australians, all of them. Can you imagine playing in the regional qualifiers? It's just Pikarom mirrors every single round. Like, that'd be so annoying.
That's what I've heard, right? Like, because they all work together too. So it's a 60 card mirror over and over again.
Yeah, all 100 and what, 15 of them, 60 card Pikarom mirror. How many people did they actually get? I don't actually know how many they got for there.
They get 128. I don't know how many people actually registered, but
yeah. But yeah, we just kind of like came to like, we talked about like our backups. And he seemed like he was a little bit interested in Tempozard at some point. But then he was like, there's no way I played enough games with it. And then once like we kind of like were like, the Australians are going to bring Pikarom, we were like, okay, I don't want to play Tempozard. He was still like, his backup Pikarom, so I was like, well, now I have to play Rapid Strike. But we were like, we both thought it was a very powerful deck and like overall very good, especially if we thought Australians are bringing Pikarom and Eternatus might be the best deck in the format. it's kind of just a good play, and you can beat like anything else. As long as there's nothing like too psychic heavy, which there really wasn't. It was just like Mewtwo decks, but we're like, well, if we put a Mimikyu, we beat the first layer of like the out metaing the Rapid Strike, being like, oh, if they're bringing Rapid Strike, we bring Mewtwo. All right, then we bring Mimikyu. And if no one goes the second level and brings Hood or like has some other shenanigans, like a Rillaboom Mewtwo, where you bring the Mewtwo in out of nowhere, then like we just win. We win the meta of one upping each other, right? So we just put the Mimikyu in, which wasn't super popular at the time as well. So we didn't expect anyone to bring an answer to it. Like no one was playing answers to Mimikyu. So we're like, we just put that in there. And I was like, Karate Belt just seems really good. Like, I just thought like Karate Belt and Reset Stamp added a lot of depth to the deck. And I think there's a bigger advantage to play those kind of cards when you play against better players, because it's just like having more outs against them. Like, they know what they have to play around, and they know to play around those cards now, but now they have to play around them. It's not like where you're like, yo, if I get this Karate Belt, I win the game. If you take that knockout, they're like, and you play against, you know, just Joe Schmo, and they say, I'm taking the knockout anyways. You're like, well, if I get this, and then you whiff, you're like, well, that sucks. But the better player is going to play around that, right? So there is like a level to that. I mean, then most of the time you do hit it, and you're like, all right, well, then you punish the player, right? But the better player plays around it. But like, adds like, I don't know, it just adds like another level to the game to play cards like Karate Belt and Reset Stamp. So I was like very convinced I wanted to play those cards. And we didn't play Phoebe because we didn't expect Lucabana, we didn't expect Decidueye. And we were like, Cheryl's cool, but then you have to play Mewtwo. And Mewtwo is not that great. We have like three boss and a great catcher. So you only really recover the Marnie with it ever. So we just put a fourth Marnie in over Mewtwo instead of Mewtwo because we weren't going to play Phoebe. And Cheryl was like, okay, way better than this is in Cincino build for sure, because you like set up and then like you can draw cards and play the Cheryl, which is pretty good. But yeah. And then we just decided, all right, let's play. We locked it in. And that was it.
Play did you have with the deck before you decided to do that?
I mean, I played that one tournament with it where I had the Electro Charge, but I think that was like the only tournament I played it in. I played it a little bit on ladder before as well.
When, was basically when did you decide to cut the Electro Charger? Did you bring that up?
No, the Electro Charger did not come up.
That's missed opportunity.
Them play around. Make them play around that.
Make them play around the Electro. Oh yeah, I don't know, those cards, like, it feels like it adds, that was like my idea in my head when I thought about them, and they're definitely good cards. I don't know if I'd continue to play the Karate Belt. The Reset Stamp I think is still very, very powerful though. But they just add so much more depth. Like, if you like imagine like being like, you could not play Reset Stamp, or you could, it'd be like, well, that sounds pretty good to have it. You could not play Karate Belt, or you could, it's like, well, it sounds good to have it, right? Like, that's the kind of way I thought about it in my head. It's just like, it can be game changer, especially what you can do with Karate Belt with it. I can go like boss, Karate Belt, Rapid Strike, hit two things, pass. They go, okay, hit. And you go, all right, attach another one, hit two things, you lose. Like, you can be so far behind or even a little bit behind, and you just start rapid flowing every single turn in a row. You just win the game. So I feel like it adds a ton of depth to the deck to have around. It's not necessary though, especially with so many people playing Mew. Sometimes you have to take the Gale Thrust route anyways.
Seems like such a strong deck with Probat, you know, being, and Dedenne being weak to it, being able to put some splash damage early and then come clean that up and kill the other one for four prizes. It just seems like setting up your prizes is a much more thinking game, but like it's available most of the time because people have to play those cards to draw into, you know, get themselves set up.
Yeah, that's what I've been saying about Rapid Strike a lot recently. It's like anyone can like pick up the deck and hit for 150 over and over again, but to like see the path you can take to get your six prize cards that is most optimal is like very hard to do. That's why I feel like its success rate is pretty poor right now in tournaments. It's just like, it's hard to see the path. Like, we had Stefan Ivanov, great player, right? Get second in a tournament with Rapid Strike this week. But besides that, I feel like it's kind of been struggling, but it's a hard deck to play. Like, if you just sit there and do 150 over and over again, the deck's not that good. But when you apply like the path you can take with Rapid Flow and like the way you can set up your prize cards with the deck so you never have to draw more than six prize cards, and you just try and play as efficiently as possible into just getting enough damage in play to draw six prize cards. And that's something you can have a lot of control over with as well with the GMAC Rapid Flow, is just only actually not just only drawing six prize cards, but doing like almost the exact amount of damage to draw six prize cards as well. You'd have like, you can make it so you have like no wasted damage in play, which is like, it's like, well, if you do way more damage, then that's great, because you, I mean, it doesn't seem like a bad thing, right? Like, you just put a bunch of extra damage in play, it doesn't seem bad if you still win, right? But when you can be that like precise with how you draw your prize cards and the damage you put in play, the deck's pretty good. But like, it's definitely like a big learning curve from just, you know, 150, retreat 150, retreat 150 to like stopping, KOing this, hitting this, using GMAX Rapid Flow and so on. So definitely, I mean, another level to the deck.
It doesn't sound terrible if you splash a bunch of Cheryls in there.
that can buy you some time. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Cheryls can buy you a little time.
I'm a big Cheryl stan.
No, I think the Cheryl's really good. In the Jirachi build, it's a lot harder to pull off consistently. If you can do it, it's great. But I think that's another thing why I didn't want to play Cheryl is because I feel like you have to play 2 to 3 air balloon, because that's like another piece you want in play already. If you have the karate, like if you don't have an air balloon in play when you Cheryl, that's like you need the switch card to the bench, back to the active, or go to a bench. But if you have the air balloon on there prepped, they Marnie you, you get the Cheryl, you're like, all right, Cheryl, balloon, retreat to new Urshifu attack, right? But if you have only one balloon in the deck, or you already like, or you have the karate belt on your active, you can't even balloon it. Like, that's like another reason I wasn't a huge fan of like considering Cheryl in the list me and Fouché played, was because I was like so hooked on the karate belt.
No, I love karate belt. It's definitely, I've only played the Cinchino version because, you know, I simp toward, but like the karate belt has just come in so much handy. And I feel like also, like you said, when people play Cheryl, they're just like, haha, Cheryl, 300 damage, hit for 30. And then you're like, okay, good turn.
Yeah. So yeah, basically you didn't, you just kind of like reset yourself to the same position. That's why I like the Cinchino build with Cheryl. Way better, you draw the extra cards. It's in the Jirachi build, I would like, if you're playing Cheryl, I'd even maybe go up to like 3 air balloon, to be honest, if you're like hooked on wanting to play Cheryl, because like you need just as much in play as possible to just make it so when you hit the Cheryl, you're not just doing 30 damage, because then they just hit you again and you're like, well, I'm back right to where I was, where I was losing. That's why I played the Cheryl. Now I'm still losing.
So, oh, wait, actually, Boo, ask one of your questions.
Okay. Okay, here's one. I know you touched, you briefly touched on it in chat yesterday, the baby trio coin and the lightning deck box.
I want to see if it like how it felt to be one of those players who like plays on ladder and they're playing ADP but they have a lightning deck box. It could be Pikaram. Oh, it's ADP. I mean, obviously it doesn't matter in an open deckless tournament, but I was like, what is the feeling like? And then the baby trio coin, I don't think we had a ton of access because a lot of people had the baby trio coin. If I remember correctly, there wasn't many coins to choose from, and that was just the best one. I think there was a blue one, baby trio, and then is there a standard coin? Like, is there like a,
it's like a red Arceus, right?
Arceus, yeah.
That might be it. It might have been that, a blue one, and the baby trio. So I just picked the baby trio one because there wasn't very many options, if I remember correctly, on the master accounts. Why don't they have like a Pokeball? Why isn't the default one a Pokeball coin? Why don't they have a default Pokeball coin?
Do we even have a Pokeball coin on PTCGO?
I don't think so.
The backside is.
Yeah, the backside is a Pokeball. Well, there could be one on the front too.
But then you can't tell heads from tails. What are you going to do?
I'll send a support ticket.
Don't fix the game. Just give us a Pokeball coin.
Yeah. Ranked ladder or Pokeball coin?
So, I have a question about like the logistics of like what does off-stream Azul playing PTCGO look like? Because I imagine you've like never played off-stream, not on YouTube, until that tournament. I don't know if that's actually true, but like, are you just like vibing to music? Is it like what is it like? What are you doing?
It's kind of like, it's just like the same things that I'm doing on stream, except I'm not talking to chat. That's basically it. I don't talk out loud. But otherwise it's kind of the same thing. I don't know, not too much of a difference.
Okay, you don't have like Netflix on another screen or something like that?
No, I don't even remember if I was listening to music. I maybe did have music on, I don't remember. But I mean, I rarely play Pokemon not on stream or not for YouTube videos, or like recording for YouTube videos, so, or PTCGO, I guess. But yeah, I can't think. I don't, it's basically the same thing, except I'm not talking.
That's fair. I also haven't played much. I'm usually like curled up in a Snuggie, which is like a pretty big difference between being on stream. So I wasn't sure if there's other something going on.
Flip.
Well, yeah, I literally never play PTCGO if it's not to record something or on stream. So like I'm never, like I play so much PTCGO that I just like not, playing Pokemon is not a way like I chill out or like relax. Like for me, it's not like, oh, I'm just going to chill, hang out on the couch, and play some PTCGO on my iPad or whatever. Like I just like, that would never, Pokemon's just never my go-to, because it's like, and I enjoy doing it for when I am doing it, but it's not like my go-to thing to you know, wipe people blanket with or something.
You never get on and test a deck like I know Sackett was on last night testing some garbage.
No, I just make a note of it and then do it, play it on stream tomorrow. Like if there's a deck I want to play, I just like make a note of it and I'll play it on stream tomorrow.
So why didn't you practice more for this tournament? Like, I mean, that sounds kind of stupid because you play on stream for like 30 hours a day or 30 hours a week at least, if not more. But like, Did it ever cross your mind of like, I should try hard. There's a lot of money on the line. Or was it just like, man, I'm sure I'll be fine.
I mean, I didn't. So I think the tournament is definitely up to a higher standard than the average online tournament for sure. Right. And I would even like classify this like, I mean, if we want to get like categorical with it, it's basically a regional championships. I don't know if I want to say it's harder or not, because once again, like concentrated talent pool is still pretty high for like Europe or North America. And obviously there's a lot of great players who in both regions who aren't playing right now, or Australia, like Henry Brand doesn't even play right now. One of the best players in the world. Same thing for Latin America, I'm sure. So I don't know, maybe it's like similar to like a regional level as far as talent pool goes, but obviously just adding like any player like Tord or Jeremy Lim into the mix is going to be like a big game changer. Right. So I don't think it's like, it's definitely not as hard as Worlds. I'd say probably about a regional. I think ICs are probably going to be a little bit more stacked as far as talent goes as well. Especially with like the travel awards, which is great that Pokemon does. So they bring all the top players from all the regions into the same spot. And then you have those extra top players, you know, from that region who can't just like go out and travel to all the ones there as well. So I would say it's, you know, it's like around a regionalized talent event. And for regionals, I don't test that much. Like I don't overly test. Like, so I kind of thought about it in terms of like that same level of an event. I don't really test any extra for regionals.
Is that superstitious
No, I don't have the time most of the time. All right. I also don't like, because I play so much PTCGO through coaching, PTCGO or YouTube videos, streaming. I just don't really have the time, or it's not something I overly want to do. There's been times in the past where I'll test a little bit more, but like, beginning of this year, I'm trying to get the tournament site. Like for the for Atlantic City, all the games I played with Mewtwo were at League Cups and on stream. Like I didn't sit down and grind games against a matchup with one of my testing partners or anything like that. Maybe if I would have, they wouldn't have played Pikarom at the event, but you know, that's on them. and same thing going into Knoxville, I was like, let's cut a Pokegear for an Acrobike. That was it. That's the only change I made, I think, from the list. No, we put the Marshadow in, I guess, as well. And I was like, all right, that's enough. Yeah, I like, and even before that, the year before that, I did more testing once you get to the event, but like leading up to the event, those like regional events, there was no testing. We would always talk. Like me and my group would always talk. Some of them put a little bit more time in as like far as physical testing goes. I would do it sometimes, but like I was just always constantly so burnt out on Pokemon. It was like not something I could like physically get myself to do to and like be productive about it as well. So once we got to the event, there was a little bit more energy, like pre-tournament adrenaline and so on. So, and then adrenaline once you got into the tournament, started playing games. So like leading up to the event, like once you get to the hotel room with your group or whatever, or go meet up with your group, you know, do some testing then. But even then, we didn't ever really play that much for like regionals. I thought about the same way with this. Like I was basically me talking to Fouché felt like I was at a regionals. We're all sitting on our beds and we're all sitting on our beds in the hotel room or on the floor or in a chair. And we're all just talking about what do we want to play? What do we want to tech? What do we expect? That's basically what me and Fouché did, was like how I usually prepare for regional championships. It's just sitting there talking to a person or a group and being like, all right, what do we expect? What do we want to play? What do we tech into it? What do we want this for? What do we want that for? Why are we playing this? Why are we playing that? And that's basically how I usually prepare for big tournaments. So I didn't feel like I needed anything more for the Players' Cup. Obviously, like Worlds and ICs, it goes a little bit further. But like I like felt like the Players' Cup, I don't know, I just kind of felt like it was a regionals to me as far as like my... like as much as I wanted to put into it. So like ICs and Worlds definitely go a little bit extra on those, but it felt like a regionals level event to me. So I was like, I just kind of like defaulted into that mode, I guess.
So is this why we don't get a bed cam?
Yes.
No, that makes sense. Like that's one of those things, I've never had that luxury. So it's kind of like, it's interesting to hear, because I communicate with my testing partners before, but they're excessively creative. It's like, hey, why don't we play two fairy energies in Malamar? And it's like, I'm not wasting my brain cells on this. I'm going to go grind games. So it's like, it's really cool to hear that. And it's like, oh, I'm just not good enough at this game, which is fair. But it must be kind of crazy to just be like, I don't know. It's crazy to me, that level difference between like, yeah, I'm just going to talk about the matchups and I'm sure I'm going to be totally fine. Versus me, who's like, I got to play this thing like 50, 60, 70 games with this deck to maybe be competent enough to day two a regional with it.
I mean, I think that's part of the skill that Azul just has, understanding the game. We've seen him pick up so many decks, the Whimsicott deck, just here's what we need to do, figure it out. Cinchino would be better in here than Greedent, unfortunately. You know, like little twist to the thing that just I've played the game, I know how the ebb and flow of it is. Just little things like that make him a better player. And also, I believe that you offer coaching as well, right, Azul?
Yeah.
Wow, where can the people find out about that?
At metafy.gg/@AzulGG.
Check out that link.
metafy.gg/@. I don't know why there's the at there, but they have the /@AzulGG.
Yeah, which for anyone listening, I did make a video. I got coaching when I first started, and it made me go from like, I completely skipped the newbie stage and just went to being like a good player almost immediately because of it. I have a YouTube video on like why I think coaching is so good. So you should check that out too if you're unsure about why you would pay someone, because you skip being bad completely and you just go from like, oh, wow, I'm going 2-3 at League Cups to like you just top cut all of them like immediately. It's really nice. I mean, maybe not like all of them, but you get the idea.
And I felt like that's been the way I've always kind of played the game in general, like not even just for regionals, but how I play Pokemon. Like I will either play a deck. The first season I became a master, all I did was play one deck the whole year. And then I won the regionals that year. And you can only go to one regionals back that year. And then when I won with Yveltal Garb, just before, like I didn't test matchups, but I went to League Cups and stuff. And then I always like theorized a lot. And then before that Florida regionals where I played Yveltal Garb, I had just been, that's the deck I was playing. So I was like, I'm just going to keep playing it. And then I played it. And then, you know, I won that event, right? And I was like, I'm just going to keep playing it. I think it's a really good deck. I really enjoy it. That's how I've like felt with like when I won Atlantic City. I was like, Mewtwo's just a really good deck. I enjoy it. I don't think I can lose to anything besides bad decks like Guardian. So it's kind of like that same thing where it's like, I'm not teching for Guardian because that deck is terrible. And if I lose to one day one, I can still make day two, right? So that's kind of always been my mentality for decks like that. I'm not trying to beat decks that won't win the tournament because what's the point? Like they can't. Like if I just beat everything else, I will still win the tournament. And then like I had like when I won Toronto Regionals with Lorantis, I had never played a game with the deck before. But I was like, this just seems like a really good deck. It's a really good play. I talked to Fouché actually about it because he had played it the week before in Collinsville. I talked to my friend Eric, who had was gonna play it as well. And I was like, the muscle band seemed bad. I'm gonna cut the, like I just looked up Ross's list, I think, that he played, or that him and Fouché played. And I was like, cut the muscle bands, that'll make a whole ton of sense to me. The deck seems really good. I'm just gonna play it. Never played a game with it before, and then I won that tournament. So it's either like I either have a deck that I like and I know it's good, so I play it, or it's like I'm gonna try and hard counter the meta, but maybe I haven't played the deck a whole ton before. But it just like works out like when you just know the deck is that good. It's probably better to play that. Like for me, I know it's better to play that than for me to play. I don't even know what deck I was playing at that time. It was an expanded event, so I probably wasn't playing anything because I don't like expanded. I probably would
have
went.
Have you
like,
never liked expanded? That was like 3 years ago, right?
I was a little while ago. I mean, it was just wasn't like no one played expanded because expanded was really similar to like standard back then. I feel like more. I actually maybe would have played. What would I have played if I didn't play Lurantis? Oh, I played Turbodark because I actually like tweeted out and then Philip Schultz responded, "Play Turbodark. You get all the good cards in expanded," and he sent me a list of Turbo Dark, and because I tweeted out like the night before, I was like, I don't know what to play. What should I play? I just like tweeted out, what should I play for the tournament tomorrow? And Philip Schultz was like, play Turbo Dark. You get all the broken cards and you get to play it at max power and expanded. Because that's back when people were doing like the Sudowoodo like 16 dark energy build, or it was like the only Pokemon was like a Sudowoodo 4 Darkrai 4 Yveltal with the stadium, and there's like 16 dark energy or whatever. And he's like, you get to play all the broken cards. You should play Turbo Dark. And I almost played that. And if I hadn't played Lurantis, but I was like, Lurantis you just item lock, right? And you just win. Like, I'm gonna play Lurantis. But yeah, that's basically how I've always played. Like, I've never really tested like that much. For Worlds, and I think for Worlds and ICs, it's a little bit different for sure. Now, but like even like way back then, I would always just play Pokemon. If I liked the deck, I'd play that. If I could come up with a deck, or I just knew there was a deck that kind of countered the meta currently, I would just play it. And it doesn't matter how much like testing I had put in with it or not. I just like knew, especially when I like knew it was that it was so good, like it was like my inexperience with the deck will be taken over initially by just like the power of the deck against the matchups that I know I think I'm going to hit. And then by the time I'm, you know, 6-7 rounds into the tournament, I'll have enough experience with the deck where I should be able to play it almost optimally. So, yeah, that's pretty much how I've always kind of played Pokemon or played the game. I've never like really sat there and grinded matchups with like a deck that I really want to play.
So I'm not sure if I'm doing it wrong then. maybe I need to think more.
I just took down, I have a bunch of notes now, like I'm not doing it right.
Like I listen back to every podcast to make sure that the audio is fine, but now I'm gonna actually listen to this one.
I think that's probably why I've been focusing on Sword and Shield on. It's like, all right, this will be the first real format that I've been a part of. And so I can like know the game and know the meta and just know every deck and pick it up and kind of have some feel to it. But you've been playing forever as well. And then you've been streaming, what, 6-7 years?
I don't even remember when I started streaming. It's been a while, though, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because someone just had a 3-year subversary, right?
Yeah, Chip, yeah. I think Hall Saul's got like 40 something months. Yeah, Chip hit his 40 the other day. 40 months of rat.
I got dinged for $10 today.
Bro, the tier 2? Let's go.
Yeah. I think you two are my tier 2 boys. All right. I have a question. What were your thoughts on the delayed recording process with PC3? And it's obviously been with the first two as well. And then like how you're playing the decks that are technically outdated now that we see them released, and you have to sit on that information. What's your just thought on that whole process?
I mean, I think these last two, it wasn't as bad as PC1, but PC1 was like, bro, all your decks suck, bro. I remember looking at the Eternatus list. I was like, bro, what are you doing, bro? Come on. But PC2 and 3, it wasn't like that far off as much. I mean, obviously, like the development with Pikaron with the hoods and stuff. But like, besides that, it's not too far off, like, of what we're currently playing with, I don't think. Of course, it would be way better if it was live, especially I think the biggest deck that would have been cool to see live would be the Towards Cincino deck, right? Because it's like, you know, a couple weeks ago, Nico and Pedro were just like, this deck exists. And people were like,
It's a little like, suspicious.
Oh, it does, you say? And so, you know, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this deck is all of a sudden a thing, right? So it's like...
Pedro streams it every day, I wonder.
Yeah, so it would have been really cool if it was live, right? Especially for that, like, that was, like, the coolest deck to come out of the, like, the most, you know... it would have been cool if it was live, for sure. And it would definitely be cool if they do it in the future, who knows? But it definitely is, like... I feel like that for the last two, the meta hasn't been too different, especially the one before, because the meta was so bad. Like, well, what was the set that came out for that one? It was, what was our last set? Not this set, but the last
Vivid Voltage. Vivid Voltage.
Yeah, Vivid Voltage. Like, what did Vivid Voltage do? Nothing, right?
Gave us essentially, sword. Yeah. No, that didn't even give us sword. That was Champion's Path.
Yeah, it didn't give us anything. But like that one, like for that was the one that Zach won, right? PC2. Yeah. Like that one, the meta, like that was like a fine one. And like the meta didn't change too much. Between when they recorded it and when it went live, right? And this one wasn't too bad either, but there was definitely like some disconnect. And it would have been like cool to have seen specifically Towards the deck be played live. I'm sure for a lot of people, it would have been a lot more hype around it. And then the Pikaron games wouldn't have felt as bad because people didn't know about the hood technology and all that stuff. So definitely would be better if it was live. I kind of understand why they do it the way they do it. It's really hard to do live. The quality of someone recording their game and then sharing it through Discord is a big drop off there, right? And they're trying to bring out a product. It'd be cool if they were like, yo, pay a bunch of these guys overtime to have it done sooner. That would be cool, of course, right? So I don't know. We'll see what they come up with the next one. I'm sure they're always trying to improve it. I mean, they did best of 5 this time around, so they're always trying to make improvements.
Yeah, you had to play a lot there.
Yeah.
Especially knowing it was pretty much like mercy kill.
Yeah, it got really grindy at one point. I was pretty tired by the end of it. Like, I definitely like, well, like the first game of it, I was pretty like, I was pretty tired after I beat Tord. Like that's where I was like most mentally drained. I played poorly in the first two rounds. Oh, I don't know how bad I played against Spiritomb. I played bad against the Victini for sure. And then against Spiritomb, I think I probably played fine. I picked it up against the ADPs. I played, like, I feel like almost perfect against the Mewtwo Charizard deck, but that deck is pretty easy to beat, to be honest. And it's the ADPs, nice. I feel like I played, yeah, against the Mewtwo decks, or the ADPs, I feel like I played really well. But, like, I almost feel like I played better when I played against ADP. And I feel like that might have been part of it for me, is, like, I was kind of playing to the deck slash player I was against. So when I go up against Tord, I'm going to try that a little bit harder, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Which is not, you don't want to have that mentality. You want to play at maximum at all points. And that's why Tord 2-0'd all of his opponents in the lower bracket, although I had to play against ADP, and I don't think he did, so I don't know if it's 100% fair, but
that's rigged.
Yeah, so but it's always cool to beat ADP. I enjoy beating ADP when I do beat it, but if I'm gonna lose to it, I don't want to play against it. So but yeah, I feel like the Victini game I played really bad against, and then I picked it up against the lower bracket stuff, and then once I beat Tord, I was like pretty mentally drained at that point. I remember being pretty tired But and then yeah, just like in the first game, I just completely whiffed. I had lethal for like two turns in a row. I was so focused on KOing the thing with strafe. I wanted to KO with strafe. I was like, all right, it's a good okay strafe meme right here. And then I whiffed the net for the goon. I was like, all right, I'll just strafe it then. I got to win the whole tournament with strafe, which was nice. But yeah, then I would. But then it got really draining. I was like, over and over, Pikaram, they lose. Pikaram, I win. Pikaram, I win. I was like, over and over and over and over. I got punches Pikaram, punches Mewtwo, go through the motions. So it got pretty draining towards the end there.
So you, did you record every match?
Yeah.
So the Azul cut does exist.
Yes.
So
didn't delete it.
Hashtag release the Azul cut, I believe. should be trending. Because we got a part of the best part of this was that you got to commentate your own games when they were happening.
Yeah.
And the other ones. And I think I think people really enjoy the VOD reviews. So.
Oh, I love the VOD reviews.
The VOD reviews, you teaching yourself. Like, what was I thinking? Here's what I did.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always hard to go back and, like, especially because it was, like, a decent while ago. It's, like, hard to go back and be, like, okay, what was I exactly thinking in the scenario and why did I make that play? Like, I made a weird play in one of the finals games where I could have hit the Mewtwo with Gale Thrust and then bossed Pikaram and gone Rapid Float, KO Pikaram, KO Mewtwo. But instead, I Rapid Float first. But I remember I had a reason for why I Rapid Float. I remember being in the moment and choosing, knowing I could Gale Thrust it for 150 and then go for the six prizes on the next turn. But I had a reason for why. I remember having a reason for why I rapid thrust or Gale Thrust or didn't Gale Thrust the Mewtwo and went with the G-Max Rapid Flow for the 120, and it ended up working out. But I know I had a reason in the moment for why I did not want to do the Gale Thrust into the Mewtwo there, but I forget what it was. And I don't know if it was correct or not, if I could even come back to why I had that reason, but I remember having a reason.
Yeah, someone in chat said probably hammers.
Could have been hammers. Yeah, could have been hammers. But I had the karate belt set up too, so it was like I could have attacked with the other Urshifu with the basic fighting on it and just gone, all right, punch for 150. Or I could have even attached like the rapid strike energy to the bench one with the basic fighting and evolve the other one with the karate belt and just hit with just karate belt, leave my energies on the bench one. And I was like, there are a lot of ways to play, but I remember being like, all right, I actually want to G-Max Rapid Flow here, but I cannot remember why I wanted to G-Max Rapid Flow there. So maybe it was just a bad reason.
Do you have
I was gonna say we all make mistakes.
Yeah. So it might have just been a mistake.
Wait, you all make mistakes? Or I've never misplayed
more
once.
Than others.
Yeah. Do you have any more questions, Grant, before we get to the viewer questions?
I have one for both of you, and this is an interesting little topic. Azul, you've recently gone to the expression thumbnails in your YouTube. And Mello, you have not. Thoughts on the change? Is it just a breath of fresh air? And Mello, why haven't you gone to the ever so popular clickbait grabbing expression?
Bro, they're so cringy.
They are.
Even if they work, I don't need the clout and or money that bad. It's not worth it. Respect the hustle, Azul. But
I mean, it's kind of like a funny trend. I don't know if they work either. That's why I'm trying them out. But like, it is like it's clickbait and, you know, getting people to click on your video is like part of my job. So yeah. Getting people to watch my stuff. So like, you know, even if it is a little clickbaity, like if it makes that big of a difference to help me grow, become that much bigger of a content creator and a streamer and a YouTuber and all that stuff, it's worth it for sure. But like, I'm not like committed to them or anything. I actually really like Mello's too. Mello has like the layout. Or the overlay thing, like the
shout out to template, the template. For that one.
Yeah, I assumed it was Doom. Yeah, yeah. And I've always actually thought about like having someone do a template for me. So maybe I'll hit up Doom to do a template for me after I get through the face expression phase. We'll see.
I mean, it could stick. You never know. Yeah. It might we'll just see. Be the play. Like I learned, one of my students was like, "You need red arrows." Like that's stupid. And I added red arrows, and my impression click through rate's gone up 1.5%. It's so stupid.
Add some more arrows. Maybe you just don't have enough arrows out there.
That could be if we just, yeah, you're not wrong.
Per arrow.
All right. I got two more quick things. One, Mello, you were able to change your name on PTCGO. Azul, you still have the dashes.
Yeah.
Have you reached out and tried to change?
Yeah. They said no, basically. It's like, if there's personal information in your name, you can't, you can change it. but it would still have personal information is basically the thing.
So you could change it to not Azul GG, yeah, essentially. So,
yeah, but it doesn't make any sense.
You have a suggestion, Boo?
No, I was going to say, so they wanted you to get rid of your Mariners fan because they suck.
They did. They were like, this is, we can't have this happen. They're so
and
bad.
Then the Prize Tracker app, Dillinzer wanted to shout out for that. I think he's done a decent job with that. He says use the website version, not the download, but he will put in a bigger download button.
Oh.
But whenever you go to GitHub, there's no download button, and then you have to like find the thing, and then you have to figure out which one you're supposed to download. There's like 6 or 10 different things in the section there. Well, should I do the installer? Should I do the one where I have to manually do it? I just downloaded an update for one of my OBS things. I did the installer. First, I had to find it on GitHub, do the installer, and then now apparently it didn't download correctly. It, like, I don't know. It'd be nice if there's like a big download button. You just click it and then it downloads like every other site. Or like downloads the version they think you should have, and then you can scroll down and go to the other version. Because they have like all the other versions in the GitHub, so you can like go deeper into the GitHub realm or whatever. But yeah, it'd be nice if there's like just a download button to get like the one that, because they always have one they suggest that you download anyways. Like, yo, you should probably download the installer if you don't know what you're doing. So they should just, the download button should just download that one.
He's been trying. Yeah, I know. I think he said go to his website maybe. Because of that whole thing, he's always telling us test this version, but there's like a beta and the 2.0. Like, I don't even know.
And for anyone listening,
I like it
on YouTube. It will be in the description. I will link Dillinzer's website. And for anyone listening on Spotify or etc., it should be in the show notes. Not 100% sure if I'm doing that correctly, but in theory, it'll be there. Because look, the Prize Tracker just won PC3. It's clearly
I didn't
broken.
Use it yet.
shout out Dillinzer. And then the last one is our event Saturday Deck Wizard tournament invite. I think half the people have been announced. All three of us will be on there. I'm part of Team All Night Party with Jens and Slapjacks. We won the KDR invite or qualifier, and then we've announced a few. You can check out the Twitter to see them, and we'll be announcing the rest. There's some big names in there. They're mainly all streamers. It'll all be streamed. Should be exciting. And then check out our Sword and Shield On series. We've had 2 qualifiers. Third and fourth will coincide with the next set and pre-rotation, and then an invite and probably be cash prizing. Interesting thing about the Deck Wizard thing this weekend's cash prizing. everything's always free to enter that we do, so check us out.
Bro, cash prizing for a Deck Wizard. It's so good.
Streamers making a living, man.
I mean, you're not wrong. All right, so we got some questions from chat. We're not going to get to all of them, but as always, we're live on twitch.tv/mellow_magikarp. You can come find us here. Also, if you do have questions you can't catch us live, feel free to leave them in the YouTube comment section or in an iTunes review. And once I learn how to read the iTunes reviews, we will answer the question in a future episode. But we'll do as many as we can. We'll do as many, because there's a heckin' lot of them. Do the people not realize I can ask you these questions every day on your stream?
Yeah. A lot of them look familiar.
All right. The first one's a meme, but it has to be asked. Because Azul, you say a lot of things that I'm just like, what is this man saying? Mr. Soda King asks, is relish a salad?
No. Put it in. Potato salad.
I like that you've come around to at least acknowledging the name relish. I know you're giving me a little bit of gruff, but...
The hot dog condiment, yeah, relish.
Right. I don't even like pickles, and I call the deck relish.
All pickles then, bro.
Yeah.
All right. There's a lot of meme ones, so I'm skipping a lot of them. There's another meme one, but not a bad one. Slapjacks13 asks, what is the optimal breakfast?
I mean, like, I forget the name. It was like sausage, beans, tomatoes. What is that one called?
Bro, an English breakfast?
English breakfast, bro. That kind of stuff's pretty good. No. Yeah, I like that. I don't have it very often. Like, I had French toast earlier, so
it's always good.
But like English breakfast, like that's cause I, like for me, because that's something I don't have very often. English breakfast, something like that.
Yeah, I think a full spread's the best option. You know, give you something of everything. Biscuits, gravy, eggs, bacon, sausage, all that.
Every morning, cup of cottage cheese, scoop of protein powder, a scoop of powdered peanut butter.
I've been doing yogurt and granola for breakfast.
Well, see?
Daily breakfast. Pretty good.
Y'all can't insult it. Once we get back to regionals, you're like, yo, Mello kind of jacked. That's why.
I mean, yeah, my breakfast has been consisting of protein shake. But, yeah, like if I had to like pick a best breakfast, definitely be English.
Roy John asks, favorite Brazilian food or food you got from traveling to a tournament? I'll start.
I have like a, go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, I've never had Brazilian food, but favorite from, I need to eat. Bro, I've heard Brazilian food's literally just meat. On meat,
yeah,
like,
it is. It sounds so good. It's just meat and rice. Like,
those are amazing.
I don't know what a Brazilian food is.
Anyway, for me, going to Dallas, getting barbecue was. I want to go back to Dallas. I don't even care about the Pokemon, man. It was like I missed day two. I felt kind of bad because my first day two miss of the season, and then we got the barbecue, and I'm like, nah, we good. Like, this is fine.
Did you go to 8-Ball? Is that what it's called? 8-something?
Oh, shoot. I have no idea. I'd have to look back in my messages to find out where we went. But it was good. It was not close to the venue. We definitely had to Uber there.
That was probably the one then. I mean, that's the one that everyone talks about. That's the one I've been to a couple times.
The one where it's like, you walk in and it's just like immediately you see the smokers cooking. And it's
yeah,
just
yeah,
like
there's one
the
smoker on each side and yep. You walk around.
Okay, yeah, that was the one then. It was good.
Yeah.
All right, what about y'all?
I mean, that might have to be the same for me. The Brazilian food, like, I don't, like, when I went to, the couple times I've been to Brazil, it's just, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of meat, which is not a bad thing. Meat's pretty good. But there's, like, I don't know if I've, like, I can't think of, like, I probably had a couple things that are, like, Brazilian foods, but I couldn't name them. So, if I had to pick, like, just, I mean, it might be, like, the same one for me, like, just barbecue. I'm a big fan of barbecue food. It's just really good. Usually, because there's a lot of meat. Like, I can't think of like any other food that I've had like regionally. I was emu in Australia. I tried emu and crocodile, I think, burgers. Those were pretty good. So that was pretty good. They were also meat.
Moral of the story. Yeah, I can't wait to start traveling. I got in a little too late to the game for the travel stuff, but looking forward to it, and I know I like to meme to go to Outback first when we take the team out to Outback, but I'm guessing we'll go somewhere nicer for that.
I mean, Outback ain't bad. It depends on the city. I feel like some cities Outback is actually like, you know, this is acceptable. Like, it's totally a fine place.
It's consistent.
Smoke One Tonight asks, is Coltu a good PC4 deck? This is
kind of along the lines of like everything I said. It's like it's not bad. It's not the one of the best. I mean, it might be better in the like. It definitely is a little bit meta dependent because like a turn just is pretty bad. Random stuff with Crushing Hammer can always kind of get you, but like it's a good deck overall. Like I said, like with the Orb Beetle, like it's just a good deck. You can just like playing it's just not bad. It's not the best deck, but it's just like a solid deck. It's got solid matchups. No reason not to play it, to be honest. If you like it,
if you've played with it. Yeah, might be, but if you're just picking it up and using key on it, don't waste your time.
Yeah, it's a pretty hard. It's one of the harder decks to play for sure.
Do it when I'm in the pod.
I don't know, bro. You'll probably be playing ADP. Anyone can go Horror House Poltergeist, bro.
Ooh, yeah, that deck bodies ADP.
Yeah, that's
ADP
pretty
or Relish.
Gotta mix them up, ADP and Relish, bro.
Don't tempt him.
You have to work. You have to evolve your Rillaboom while Mewtwo uses ADP's GX attack. And excel some grass.
Me and Sack have a collab tonight. Come up with something really stupid.
Stellar Wish has a cool question. It might be too long of a full answer, but we'll also see. What do you think of the prize card mechanic? Is it good? Is it bad? And why? Or why not? So the idea of, for listeners who may not understand, like, instead of prize cards, maybe have like 6 tokens you take so that you don't actually prize cards every game. So you can't prize your tech card or something like that every game.
I mean, I think it's fine. It's like, it's weird And it's definitely like coming from like other card games, I think people would like dislike that, or like people who have only played Pokemon would also like dislike it when they kind of like know other card games don't do that. But like, I don't know, I drafted Magic recently, like, or the other day, with a bunch of friends, and you don't draw cards in Magic. Like, you're living off the top deck. Like, every turn is like prize card RNG. You're it like, what's so it gonna bad. Be? It's a land. It's another land. Like, so like, I don't know, like, when you compare, like, just like, because the I guess like always the game to compare it to is like Magic, like any game, right? Because like that is the game, and Magic is a ton of fun. I love playing Magic, but like, it's like that is, that's hard RNG. It's just your top decks are so important in like Magic and Pokemon. We have the RNG of prizes. I think at the very least you should be able to look at your prize cards before you put them down, because anyone can figure it out anyways. So like, you should be able to look at them, and if they did something different, I wouldn't hate it, but I don't think it's as bad as people like make it out to be. Like, I've seen some people discussing it recently where it's like, you can never fully like play the game because of your prize cards. So I hate, like, but there's always people complaining about something, right? That just is like unreasonable to complain about, or they're just wrong. So that's always happening, but like, it's not, definitely never, not as bad as the prize card haters think it is. But I think you should at the very least be able to just like look at them. Like, we can all figure out our prize cards. Can we just like look at the six things that are prized and just put them back down and then play the game, so we don't waste, like, my biggest thing is like when two really good players play against each other, or two players of any skill level, when we go to check our prize cards, we waste time, right? Like, yes. if there's two people who are going out of the way, so I said really good players initially, because like those, like the higher level player you are, the more likely you're going to go check your prize card. But players of any skill level, if you go to check your prize cards, if you both go check your prize cards, you're taking that much extra time out of the game, right? To go find your prize cards, which is fine, and you should do it, but it also wastes time, and we all want to complete three games. Like, if we're talking about like regional level events, we all want to complete three games in 50 minutes, right? Or want to have the ability to be able to do that. So just like, let us like draw six, look at them, shuffle them, offer for our opponent to cut, and then lay them out, right?
Yeah, for anyone who's ever watched a regional stream, you will 100% hear the casters every single round say, and this is their first deck search, so they're going to spend a little more time to figure out their prize cards. Because it's always like, oh, they're slow playing, they're taking too long. And it's like, oh, I'm trying to figure out what I need and what's not there.
Yeah.
Well, that RNG from the prize cards makes you naturally want to play a Tord type build, right? Super consistent, yeah. Four of, two ofs.
Guzzlord, 59 not, energies,
not,
baby.
And not tech, and I think that kind of stifles creativity. Especially right now, we don't have any interaction. But I mean, Azul, you were dominant with Zacian, Turbo Zacian, with the Mr. Mime and Jirachi Prism.
There's a lot of like next level play you can do to get when prize cards get involved, where like you and your opponent can apply it, but if you're only applying it and your opponent isn't, like, that's an advantage, right? If you're playing off your prize cards, like, I have four supporters prize, so when I draw three prize cards, I'm guaranteed a supporter, so I can like go down to zero card hand, right? Like, stuff like that, you should try and take advantage of, and it's fine, but it's also like fine, it just makes it easier to be able to do that. It's like a skill in itself, so like, if we removed prize cards, you'd remove that certain skill from the game, right? But then there would be also the added skill of, I constantly have access to what I need to execute my strategies now, because nothing is prized. So then my deck can always like gain the advantages it should be able to gain. So then there's that skill added there. So maybe it just ends up being neutral as far as, is there actually, will the better player win more often if the, or the person who plays more correctly in that game win more often if there is or isn't prize cards, right? Now, I guess not always better player, but just the person who plays more optimally throughout the game. Will they win more often whether there is prize cards in the game or isn't prize cards in the game? Because there's like two different sets of skills that get applied whether there is or isn't. I think at the very least we should just know what they are before we put them down. It just might make things a little bit easier, a little bit faster.
That is
about like a town map, and then you get you shuffle them and put them back down. Like you rearrange them at least.
As like,
so
a
you
card?
Know what's in there. Or just like a GX counter.
Oh, you mean you just get to do that?
I want to look at
once
yours.
Per game. Then,
yeah, maybe, I don't know.
You can look at your opponents too.
Sure. Yeah, both of you do it. You know, I don't know. Idea.
I want to be terrible.
No, but that is an interesting point. The idea, because like playing off of your prize cards, and sometimes you play down your hand because you're like, I don't care. I'm going to draw three prize cards plus a top deck. Yep. It's a four card hand. I'm totally fine. Yeah. And if you remove prize cards, that becomes just a new skill you have to have of like, is it worth mortgaging my hand in order to take three prize tokens instead of, you know, getting to draw three cards, especially, you know, I've got two welders prized. This is just an advantage for me, but now it's not.
Yeah, and that's actually like another thing is like just having card advantage isn't as a big of a deal in Pokemon, but it is when you're like, you know, going to a pretty low hand size and you're taking a knockout. If you're not drawing prize cards, you just have a very low hand size, right? Like you just have two cards, a two card hand. You're like, well, see what I can do with this next turn. But if you draw those three prize cards, I mean, obviously, always getting your top deck. But yeah, if you get the three prize cards involved, that's like a, that much more. And people play around that. I don't think people realize how much they play around that. But it's just like, oh, I know I'm going to have these extra cards to work with. But they don't think about that in that way. But it's like, what if prize cards just aren't there? You don't have those extra cards to play with anymore on the next turn.
That's why the new tool, or the recent tool, discard your, if your opponent takes a prize, discard it.
Billowing smoke or whatever.
Yeah.
Underexplored.
It could be good at control. It could be good at control, right? Because like you put it on your extra drill and you're like, your hand locked, your top deck is locked. Basic can your Pokemon can attack, but you don't get those prize cards. I wonder if Sanders thought about that. Should add him on Twitter.
He'll respond to you.
I know. Yeah. Always helpful.
So do you all have time to do a few more questions, or I don't want to hold you longer then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay. Him, not me. I'm here all night.
Or the all night party.
Yeah.
All right. Professor Poke asks, and specifically for Azul, so thanks for not wanting to know my opinion. Hey, I almost top cut a regional that one time. It's close. Would you rather play the counter or counter the counters?
I mean, it just depends, like, on how good I think it would be. Like, because I've done that. I've gone counter the counters, and I've also just, like, played the counter. Counter the counters is usually better, but it's a little bit hard to figure out when and if it's actually correct, because you have to also have them bring the counter, and the other stuff is still in the meta as well. So that one's a little bit harder to make the call of, countering the counters. It's way harder to do and harder to pull off successfully. But just playing the counter is usually pretty good, as long as you know what the counter, or playing the counter, but you being aware of what the other potential counters are to the meta, so that way you can deal with those, or just make sure you're good for the mirror match usually. But
I think we've all shown up to a tournament. Oh, okay. Azul might be too good for this, but you show up to a tournament and you're like, I'm countering the BDIF. And then you show up to the top tables at 3-0 and you look around and you're like, everyone also countered it, but their counter takes out me. Like, oh, shoot.
That's why I always gotta like think about that as well. Bob, or like back in the day, when it. Everyone played when Greninja was a deck, I would just play Giratina promo. Like at locals and stuff, when the Greninja players would roll up, I'd be like, "All right, we're putting it in." You know who the Greninja were? Everyone had the Greninja players in their area too.
Lee. we had a lot of Greninja. Thankfully, I didn't play when Greninja was in standard, or like I did, but it was like a month. There was like two League Cups I went to. But apparently everyone at our locals played Greninja. There were four people who brought Greninja all the time. It's like, that's...
No one played Giratina?
I have no idea. Apparently not. Or they didn't care because they just liked frogs that much.
Yes, they liked getting beat with frogs.
Although one of our people was like, he was very convinced. Shout out to Drew if you're listening. I don't know if you are. But he's like, no, you just play Silent Lab and then you auto win. Which is, I mean...
It's helpful. It's good. You can use two water shurikens to KO and then they recover it with stretcher.
No, but then they have to replace the stadium and I don't know, man. I love playing frogs, but I would have never brought frogs to an event.
Yeah.
It's just a fun meme. Okay.
I didn't know what that water energy did the first time I played against
it. Oh, the splash?
Oh, the recover one?
I was like, this actually makes the deck kind of good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, without it, would. I remember when people weren't playing splash energy. Like, the first time I built Greninja, I had four splash in there. I was like, oh, this deck's really good. And then, like, you went to the first regionals, and people are getting body. I was like, why don't they play splash energy? I remember, I built the deck. I was like, you got to run four of these. It's insane. And then, like, the first couple of regionals, people just didn't have them in there. I was like, why would you not play this card? it gets your Pokemon back for you, and it's your Shadow Stitch attack.
Yeah.
I think people were scared of Enhanced Hammer, so I don't even know why. You couldn't Giant Water Shuriken it, but yeah, obviously it developed to the point where everyone figured out that, yes, you should play for Splash Energy.
So Bob McDougal asks, what's the best water VMAX, and why is it Ice Rider Calyrex? I'm going to say... all the water VMAXs suck because they are weak to Zacian or Pikarom, and that's where that ends.
Yeah, that's like the worst of the bad, the worst of the bad, I guess. Like, there's no, or the best of the worst, like, still not good.
PJ Witusik asks, what are you most hyped for adding Chilling Rain to the meta?
It'll just bring the whole thing full circle. As we go to rotation, I don't know how. I mean, we're just seeing results right now from Japan.
Bro, Path to the Peak. I'm so freaking excited for that.
That'll
card.
Be big. That'll be really big.
It gives me Shroud of Punishment vibes, where it's just like some single prize decks will be able to abuse this card, and it's just gonna it will be that annoying stating where you're like, oh, I have to play a Path deck or whatever. It's I don't know. I'm a huge fan of those types of decks. Those like control but aggro decks at the same time.
That'll be great. And then the Crystal Ball too. I think it's
insane.
It's really good. It's Mysterious Treasure or what's the other one? Netball.
It's Netball. I was so upset when I read that, man, because I'm like, yeah, Shadow Rider's really good, and then you see that and you're like, why? why did it need this?
I mean, Shadow Rider Mewtwo sounds insane. I'm excited for that. That sounds crazy. Like you don't even need. You have all these attacks. You just load up your Mewtwo and you start swinging. Because like Shadow Rider, I at first was like, oh my gosh, this thing's insane. But then I did the math. You need 10 energy. What the heck? The one hit KO of VMAX. Like
easy.
You're 2 hit KOing most of the time, which everyone else already does. So
yeah,
I don't think Shadow Rider is that good on its own. With Mewtwo, it sounds kind of crazy. And come rotation, who knows, right? But with Mewtwo, it sounds pretty absurd. We'll see.
Yeah, the 2-hit KO meta is coming back, which is kind of cool. The only one that really does it, other than weakness, will be the single strike, which I'm a big fan of. But yeah, everything is going to be 2 hits, and that's why maybe they printed Cheryl and maybe some different energy acceleration. It looks pretty promising.
I guess as far as Path goes, I don't think Path is going to be that good, but I think it'll be really good rotation. Well, like,
oh, that's
you have
fine.
Swell, like
good
ADP,
eventually
ADP,
is fine. Yeah.
Peak's going to be like 383 swell. ADP is going to be like 3 swell. And then we have the ball that literally searches out Marshadow, the orb.
Oh, yeah.
Marshadow. Then Mewtwo Shadow. I'm just going to get my Marshadow with this orb. So it'll be good. Fair. It'll be that's good. They'll still be decks with 4 of it, but like we have a lot of tools right now to combat it. But once rotation hits, I think we'll finally have like maybe a healthy stadium format, which is I can't even remember the last time we had a good stadium format. I guess it would be like back when we had like I don't know, Brooklyn Parallel Cities was decent, I guess, but we'll see.
That one felt fine. Like going back and playing it now, it's like none of the fate stadiums felt oppressive, right? I mean,
yeah,
Parallel in theory is oppressive, but it didn't feel that bad because nothing really wanted a big bench. It was just like Parallel is just such a well designed card. Being able to get rid of yourself or your opponent's bench just felt good.
Pretty powerful. Pretty good card.
Yeah, it's been fun playing the Sword and Shield on because you don't have the swell. It's like, okay, you get to actually play the game, the design, like Training Court or Glimwood you can actually put it down when you find it.
I think swell isn't like oppressively powerful, but it's just a poorly designed card. At first, I was super hyped for it when I saw it. I was like, ooh, that's cool. But now that I played with it in the format, like it really kills stadiums. Like all you need is one deck to have a really good stadium, which is Hearth, and then another deck plays Swell that's really good, and then no one else wants to play a stadium card because that one deck plays Swell constantly, which right now is like ADP and peak. It's like even though it's just the one Swell, no one wants to like put a stadium in their deck. We don't have absurdly powerful stadiums anyways right now, but like yeah, Swell is like a poorly designed card, I think, overall.
It's like why would I play one or two Rose Tower when you know they're playing two Swell to counter 4 Hearth? Like
yeah,
it's like, something else.
It's just not worth. Be happy to see Swell go for sure.
Yep.
Marshadow, I like though. He's a cool guy.
This is a really important question because this one came with a tier one sub from Sinichi18. Thanks, Pedro. But Sinichi18 asks, I'd like to ask Azul how he deals to be mentally fresh on streaming and not get anxiety with so many viewers every day.
Good sleep. drink water. taking a break to like I took a pretty long break there where I was just like not I had a pretty long break at the beginning of the year. I don't know, was it the beginning of the year where I just like wasn't playing PTCGO. I was just playing Hollow Knight and a bunch of other games, Ori, stuff like that.
Those are good streams.
I've been doing the Warzone streams recently with Chip and Slusky, which has been really fun. So switching it up with the streams to like keep streaming, but then like doing something different. Or just not streaming, just don't stream as much or take more break days. Like I don't stream on Tuesdays anymore unless it's like a late night Warzone stream, but those streams are like so relaxed and like whatever it's called, like I don't like, it's almost like I'm not streaming. So I'm just hanging with the goons, but taking breaks, just not doing it for a while. I had that period of time where I just wasn't playing in any tournaments. I was still like streaming PTCGO, not every single day. And I wasn't playing in any tournaments because I was just like kind of burnt out. Just don't overdo it. Just like it's, and like, as far as like trying to keep up with the content, keep up with the grind, and keep up with the flow of it all, like you don't actually have to stream that much to like keep up with it. You could stream like every other day or less, and it would be like fine. Like, I would say sticking to a schedule is really good, but you can make that schedule around whatever works for you. I guess like as far as like anxieties, like I definitely had more anxiety when I first started streaming. And then I would always have like little hits as I hit like new spike. Like when I had 1500 people watching me for the Limitless, I looked over, I was like, oh my gosh, like there's like, so those hit me, but like, it's just one of those things. And I've always, like, people ask me, how do you like stop anxiety for like when you play in your first tournament or being nervous? It's like, you just kind of have to do it, like, and then do it again. And then do it again, and then do it again. Like, I don't know. I'm not like a therapist or like anyone who like has any psychological background or expertise. So I don't like know, you know, what goes on the average human brain to like get around those kind of mental blocks or mental strain. But like, I know for me, if I just do it again and do it again and do it again, it's easier and I get better at it. So for as far as like, you know, streaming in front of the amount of people that I stream in front of every day, it's just like, I've just gotten used to it at this point. You got to do it. You have to do it. And that's all you got to basically do and do it again.
Do you ever think about, so my wife brought this up. I'm an introvert. If I'm around a group of six people, I'm probably not going to say a single word unless we're like pretty close friends. And yet I can stream. I mean, my streams will vary immensely. It'll be like 22 people. Sometimes it'll be 122 people sometimes, but it's just like, they're not real. Like they're not that they're real, not real people to me. Thank you for everyone watching. I know you exist, but it's like, cause I can't see them.
Twitch chatters are just a bunch of peepos, bro. There's a bunch of peepos.
Exactly. Is that, but like, do you think of that? Do you like, there's 500 people watching me in top four right now? Or are you just like, it's just a number and you're like, I know that's a lot, but also I'm playing Pokemon.
I guess like the latter for sure. I mean, sometimes it hits me like the other day, like, throughout the Glimwood, like my stream crashed as well, but I saw like 500 people watching me like pretty much all the time, and I was like, that's just pretty cool. I just mentioned to stream, like, hey, it's pretty cool, we had like 500 people watching the whole time, appreciate the support. But like, it was like a more of a grateful feeling than anything, as far as, instead of being like, oh my goodness, there's 500 people, like, you know, I don't know. And I've been being a little bit like, I feel like I've been breaking out of my shell a little bit more as far as just being a little bit more reserved on stream recently, like a little bit more of my crazier side, I guess. So I will say, see how that keeps going. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I've never, like, yeah, like, the latter, I guess, definitely. It's just like, there's 500 people watching, but we're still playing Pokemon. They're here to watch me play Pokemon. I'm just going to play some Pokemon. We're just chilling playing Pokemon, right?
Like, I public speak maybe 2-3 times a year, like moderating panels or being a panelist and things like that. Like, my thought process is,
bro, sometimes I forget you're an actual like professional.
Yeah, I have a real life. Yeah. I've got two coming up in the next month.
No, it's just the book that hangs out in chat, bro.
Right?
Not a troll. I just like memes. But my thought is, you get a captive audience, right? And you get to tell them your thoughts that you are supposedly the expert on, and you know take advantage of that. What's to be nervous about there? They're coming to hear how smart you can be, and even if you're wrong, it doesn't matter. Like, there's no fail. There's no fail. Like, especially in this stuff. Like, what happens if you misplay? You lose the game, maybe. You didn't. You know, you don't die in real life. It's not the end of the world. But you have a captive audience, and you get to entertain and have fun and do whatever you want. And I think that's what's the most fun about, especially the streaming stuff. Like, I get seven people when I stream, but speaking of, probably stream some Mario Kart tomorrow.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
Lee asks a question specifically for Azul again. So thank you, Lee, for not caring about me at all.
Or me.
Who are you?
Yeah.
Book.
So, Azul, you play a lot of different decks, ranging from aggressive decks like Buzzwole to various control decks. How do you decide what style of deck to play for a particular regional event?
Just whatever I think is best. It's like that simple. It's like whatever deck I think is best for the tournament is what I play. So that's why I don't recommend everyone does this, but that's why I will play decks I played zero games with in a tournament, because I'm like, oh, that's just what I think is the best play. Or I think it's better than the other options that I see currently. Like, obviously the best play you can only really tell after the tournament, and even the deck that won the tournament is not always the best play, and sometimes it's actually a bad deck, right? But it's like, literally, like the Lurantis deck for Toronto, I was just like, I can't come up with a better deck than this, and there could have been a better deck, right? I was like, I can't come up with a better deck. There's a bunch of good decks. The Vesper Queen Flareon deck might have been the best deck. Who was running it? I forget who was running it. I forget who played it. Was it Drew? It might have been Drew. I forget. That might have been the best deck in the tournament, was Vesper Queen Flareon, because they had Wob in there as well. So they could beat me, because they have the Wob. I actually beat a Vesper Queen Flareon with Wob. I got really lucky, but it wasn't the player I'm thinking of. So if they had beaten me, who knows, maybe they would have won the whole tournament. So I think Vesper Queen Flareon, looking back, that was probably the best play for that tournament. But as far as I could see at the Toronto tournament, when I looked at it and I was like, these are the options. Like, this is what I'm considering. And it came down to Turbodark and Lurantis Vileplume. I was like, Lurantis Vileplume just feels like a better deck because Expanded Silly, there's going to be a bunch of new decks here. Like, that's when people were playing the Toad Decidueye thing. I think that's what Kenny Britton played in his group, brought that. So there's going to be a bunch of new decks. If I just item lock them, I should win enough games to put myself in a good spot no matter what. So let's go item lock some people. So I played that deck and it worked out, right? So I was like, but I played zero games with it, right? I played absolutely zero games with Lurantis Vileplume before that tournament. I knew how the deck worked. I knew what the 60 was. So I was like, this is what I think out of my options is the best play. So I just played it. And that's how I always choose my decks. If I think it's the best play, I just play it.
Lucas Simiao asks, is a really good one. Which aspects in common do you see on top players around the world? So what are some things top players have in common as far as like...
Well, Zul's just kind of said it, you know, knowing all the decks, knowing how to play them, how they play. I think Omnipoke said it today in his prepping for PC4 video. Just know all the archetypes, know what the standard deck plays, right? Like how it plays and what it wants to do.
That's actually like a big one. It's like a lot of people just don't know. Like if you just ask them, what does like a general 60 cards look like for Baby Bounce? People just can't answer that. But you want to be able to answer that question very easily. That should be like baseline information for being competitive, in my opinion. And there's a lot of things I could say on like competitive and mentality and like, and you'll like, if you just follow, like, let's just take the Pokemon community, but you could look at sports and stuff. You just look at what some people tweet out and what top people in their perspective category tweet out, like that can be a thing right there. That's mentality right there. Like, if you just, that's something too, like how you handle yourself and like talk about your results and your gameplay or whatever it is, like that is also mentality is such a big thing, and like not just in life, but like, I mean, obviously when it gets like to something competitive, it's a huge thing in that as well. And you'll see trends between top people in any specific fields and how they interact with social media and stuff like that is like another thing. Like, I'm not going to go into specifics on that one, but I'm going to put that out there. If I ever get pushed far enough, I might rant about it one day. But that's a mentality is like huge in just aspects like that. That's nothing to do with the game, but the way you handle yourself as a person and like will definitely kind of shows like top people in areas, they all handle themselves similarly. Like the top people handle themselves similarly. So I'll put that out there, I guess. And if that's something you want to strive for, you know, look towards that a little bit. But yeah, just knowing the metagame, knowing matchups, there's like so many things to like, as far as like in-game trends go, I guess. A lot of it's mentality, I think. But doing like the baseline work, you have to do that first. Just knowing the decks, like Boo said, just knowing, like if I asked you what is generally a 60 cards of a Blacephalon deck look like, you should be able to answer that. You should be able to answer like 55 cards, right? So baseline stuff, just like that's just like baseline, like anyone can like look that stuff up and become familiar with that kind of stuff. But that should be, if you don't know that stuff yet, that's the first thing you should do for sure.
Information's power, right? And I know two good content creators that put out YouTube videos all the time and show you what different decks look like. I can think back to one instance where Xander won the DC Open with his Checkmate deck. And I read his article about it. And then I faced up against it in locals like the next few days. And I knew what he was trying to do. Just because you're, you know, ingesting content and seeing what these things are. So check out your favorite YouTube and Twitch personalities. I could recommend two here on stream with me right now.
Bro, shameless plug for yourself. Jeez.
I'm a deck builder more than the player, I think.
One
I've got one hit in life.
I mean, Relish is pretty big now.
It's taking off
and off.
Bro, especially the no draw supporters. I'm so shocked that's actually working out so well. But like three Marnies in the list.
Well, Stefan played four, and I'm like,
yeah,
that's too many.
Maybe I have been wrong this whole time.
Bro, that guy's only
four
won
Marnies
two.
Cringe, bro.
Yeah, see. One more thing off of that, too. One thing that I tend to see and something that I took for granted quite a bit was all the top players collaborate. I was too stubborn to collaborate a lot early on. And as I've started to collaborate with people, just people in general, it tends to help. So in addition to everything that has been said, doing it alone just puts you at a disadvantage compared to everyone else. Like, four brains are better than one, even if three of those brains aren't actually that good. Sometimes people make Relish and it turned out that was pretty good.
Yeah, that's definitely a big one as well. Yeah, just, I mean, having a testing group of people to like constantly throw ideas off, and especially becoming familiar with those people. Like, you can, you know, work with these people today and these people tomorrow, but becoming familiar with those people consistently is pretty good. And I think, and I always like kind of reference this, like, it really depends on how seriously you want to take the game in general, because you don't have to take the game super seriously, but especially getting together with a group of like-minded people who like are want to win, right? If that, like, and that's what your goal should just be, is to win, as opposed to like anything else. It should just be to win. If you come into a group with like-minded people, that's just that much better, right? Those are the, like, if that's your goal, you want to find those people out there who also have the same goal and then collaborate with those people specifically. You don't have to, like, you know, completely ditch and exile your other friends who just like kind of play more casually, but like, you know, go work with your tryhard group for sure and play with them and like go through those motions. And then another thing is, don't be stubborn and try and avoid working with people who also are stubborn. Cause like stubbornness, I think, is like one of like a huge thing that holds back so many people in this game, from like not switching decks to like just like not changing up their theory on a matchup or a tech card or something like that. Yeah. Don't be stubborn. Assume you're always wrong for the most part, or assume like that you could be wrong, I guess is what I should say. And then either try and crack someone who's being too stubborn, or just like sometimes you just got to move on and find someone else to like work with if they are just kind of a constantly stubborn person who just like doesn't want to switch it up.
So for the sake of, we could keep going. We've gone on really long. I appreciate both of you for the time, but for the sake of time, I think we'll cut it off there. We skipped a ton of questions, some of which were memes, a lot of which were memes, man, a lot of which were memes. But for those of you who didn't get your questions answered, sorry. Eh, not that sorry. But Azul, where can the people find you?
Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Azul GG on Twitch and YouTube. Twitter is Azul_GG. Check me out there.
Grant, where can people find you?
At RealBooCK on Twitter. Boo_CK on Twitch. Probably streaming some cart tomorrow. I think it's Anti's birthday and he likes to play. So,
is Mario Kart still $50
or probably 60? Yeah.
I was gonna say I might buy it then and join it. Maybe I've got money.
Yeah, I might dono you. quick shout out to, as we talked about Relish, shout out to Woozer for helping, you know, theory craft it, and Delock for helping me learn how to play it.
Yeah. I made this deck. Locke, what do I do?
Yeah. That's a bad play.
Coach Locke, bro. Coach Locke. Are you teaching me how to play Fall Guys? Teaching you how to play Relish?
Locke's my guy. I owe him too much.
He's an underrated player. We didn't say that enough when he was actually on, but he's actually quite good. The problem is his decks are usually not.
Well, yeah, he just plays. It's like when Sosa was still playing Yveltal Garb in like 2019. It's like, just, bro, pick up a good deck, bro. And then he finally... this year I started playing. He hasn't played good decks like since Yveltal Garb was good. And now finally, like these last 2 years, he's playing good decks again. So Locke just needs to start playing good decks.
All right, y'all. So, all right. Thank you for your time. This has been another episode of the Lake of Rage podcast. We will catch you all next week.
Maybe.